Mickey Hart here, you're listening to the GAA Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Alright, you're very welcome along to the GAA Hour brought to you by AIB. Today I'm joined by Sports Just Allwards, usual regulars, Conan and Mikey. How's it going, lads?
Alright, buddy.
Brilliant show lined up today, lads. We have the legend that is Ken McGrath going to come into studio and talk to us. Ken McGrath, Conan, you're not a hurling enthusiast, but you must remember Ken McGrath.
I do, surely. I guess I still love hurling, like, and not just that much involved in it as I would be with the football, but God almighty, I've actually been skimming through Ken's book as well, but you two lads seem to have added up in a couple of days.
Conan would be a big fan of a fist pump. And Ken McGrath would be one of the legends of the fist pumping game.
The celebrating scores, yeah, they brought that to a whole new level. Yeah. He was the all action though, like, I mean, full forward, centre back. Then Davy tried to make a full back out of him. He hated it, but he just had everything. Just pure.
Finished at midfield.
Played championship on every line of the field. Like, he was just the all round brilliant hurler, and on a team that I bloody loved, that everybody loved, everybody around the country was willing them, a bit like Mayo is now, you know, just please, Waterford, you can't be bad luck all the time, and it seemed to be just bad luck all the time.
Well, it was bad luck they came up against the best hurling team in history in their prime in 2008. That wasn't bad luck, that was just a beating to end all beatings.
It was, and they were kind of, Waterford kind of on a downward trend after getting rid of Justin McCarthy and Kilkenny were an upward curve. But the horrible thing for that Waterford team is that Cork were their main rivals at the time. They drew 4-4 with Cork in huge games, whether it be all Munster finals, All-Ireland semi or All-Ireland quarter-finals, all the big games, 4-4. Cork win 2 All-Irelands in that time, Waterford don't even get to one. You know, so they were beating them in Munster, but then they come up to Croke Park and they couldn't seal the deal, but Cork could.
There's so much to do to win those games, like those Munster finals, like, is it 2004, that just stands out as, you know, arguably the greatest game in the most fabled championship of them all. Everyone loves the Munster championship, but that 2004 final, that had everything. And I think it did, it was everything to Waterford to get out of a Munster championship, and I suppose it's the old story, they didn't have quite enough left to do anything else after that.
Am I going to sound like the oldest young man ever? Was hurling just better back in that decade? It seemed like I only sort of tuned in for the Munster finals and the semi-finals and stuff, and they were amazing.
No, hurling, a lot of people say hurling was best during the late 90s when Clare came out of nowhere, Limerick came out of nowhere, Wexford came out of nowhere. You know, obviously Wexford didn't, or Limerick didn't win in All-Ireland, but you know, there was three.
Offaly
came out of nowhere. Yeah, well, not out of nowhere, but like lots of different. It was shared around an awful lot. So let's see, that was the golden era. But for incredible games and rivalries, the early noughties probably were.
Yeah, I know. There was some, in Munster in particular, there was just so many teams who came good at the right time and at the same time. And that Cork team, You know, there was just a lot of great teams. That Cork team was at their peak, and then they got knocked off their pedestal by a Kilkenny team who went on to win 4 All-Irelands in a row. So to be good in that time, you did have to be particularly good.
A brilliant one in Ken's book, and we'll move on now, that I'm going to ask him about when he comes in, is he was in that Munster final in 2004 and he was fired up. The game was nearly won. Milan got sent off. Flynn got a brilliant goal. It was just, like you said, one of the greatest games of all time. And he catches the last ball, you know, it's a really important ball. He knows when he takes this free, the game's over, and he's fired up, he's pumped up. And Dermot O'Sullivan, friend of the show from GAA Jackass, runs past him and says something, and McGrath's hyped up, he's pumped. He says, "What the hell did you say?" Says to Sully, and Sully says, "Great catch." just a beautiful little story about the rivalry and how, you know, Sully in that cauldron, in that high pressure game, is just able to appreciate such a brilliant catch from Ken McGrath. I just thought it nearly brought a tear to my eye.
Is that the year we
two
were
of my hurling heroes being so nice to each other?
Is that the same year we were analysing Cork's puckouts and the short puckouts, and we had to stop them? It was almost like the Stephen Cluxton now. It's so cyclical.
Yeah, no, it is. Well, there's always talk about another person's going to be on the show today, lads, is Declan Brennan. Former Monaghan selector, He won a few county titles with, he actually won 4 county titles as manager of Contibret in Monaghan. So he knows all about being in the intercounty scene. He knows all about being a club manager. He knows all about Sigerson Cup. He was in DCU for a little while. He's setting up the CPA, Club Players Association, or Gaelic Club Players Association. And this is actually gaining traction. He's overwhelmed by the messages of support, by people who want to come on board. I've offered my services to him. I'm really happy that this has come about. And finally, after all the years of maybe, like, this has been mooted a lot, but like nobody's actually got up off their arse really to go and do something about it.
I'd be as guilty as anybody from years in newspapers. And, you know, you knew as soon as the intercounty season ended, certain stories were going to come up. And they would come up every year. And one was the plight of the club player. And he always said, people do so much complaining now, but nothing's ever done. Come February, the league will start again. Everyone will have forgotten about the club player, and everyone will be complaining about whatever it is, whatever's complained about in the spring.
The championship.
Yeah, or warm weather training camps, whatever it is. There, you know, there's a calendar of moans in the GAA. So fair play to Declan Brennan. He's actually the first man after as long as I can remember who's listened to the complaints and the plight of the club player, and he's decided to actually do something. So yeah. I'm interested to hear what he has to say.
It is interesting, and they're going to have a meeting in the coming weeks, and they're going to set out their agenda, and they're going to send out the message in relation to what they're about. Just really excited about what that's going to be.
Does it raise a few questions about the GPA? I mean, I always feel like they're doing the club players a bit of service, a disservice, that they're not sort of catering for them. I mean, what's the difference? Like, what's the difference in a club player coming back from Belfast to Derry or wherever it is, Dublin to Mayo, and a county player doing it? Why are they getting expenses? Why are they sort of tapping into this government grants and the GAA grants?
No, I think there's a very easy answer to that, Conan, is that intercounty players, whether you like it or not, they're the cash cow of the GAA. They generate millions and millions for the GAA. They are in front of 80,000 people in Croke Park. They're a huge money generator, and they wanted a piece of that pie, as in they wanted to be looked after. If they're adding so much to Irish life during the summer, the country shuts down for these players, that, you know, it's natural that they want to be treated better. Club players don't have that leverage, you know, so it's impossible. Club players are more like, you know, a runner who goes to a competition who's amateur, and you just take that expense on board because it's a passion of yours. You're not generating millions for someone. Then if the club players were doing that, then I'm sure they would be looking for improved terms.
There are plenty of players who would be number 28 and 29 on those squads who aren't exactly generating the millions, and there's plenty of counties who aren't generating millions.
You can't just give the first 15.
Well, suppose the club players might start thinking about that then. Who are the guys who are number 35 and 40? And like, I'd love to have this sort of backing, like, and help with my nutrition and help with my training, and just sort of take the... I'm just thinking about it from a club perspective, where I'd love to do all that stuff to be a county player.
Sorry, numbers 35 and 40, I think. you need a second team, man. So,
I think, like, look, genuinely, club is an amateur pastime. Intercounty isn't anymore, and intercounty is big money, and intercounty players have a union. I think that's, you know, fair enough.
Yeah, we were chatting about it earlier. We were looking through the club fixtures this weekend, and you were looking at the Cavan County final replay, as we all were. And I was saying how Remora United stuck in my head because I was going through Virginia recently, and there's flags everywhere. This is a few weeks ago before the first final. And on your way out of Virginia, on the north side of it, there must have been, I'm not exaggerating, 50 or 60 signs from local businesses showing their support for the team. You know, so it's on a much smaller scale. Obviously, we're not talking national scale, but you can't say that clubs don't contribute to local communities and local economies.
That's just those guys.
No, that's what I mean. But I mean, they're looking for free advertising or whatever.
But the interest
that there is on a micro level, I know it's not national level. So you know, there has to be ways of looking at funding the club.
Yeah, you see, I don't think the club is looking for funding. I think this Gaelic Club Players Association is purely being set up, not for improved terms. Basically, what they're going to look for is a blueprint of a fixture schedule that's going to be stuck to, and players are going to not be messed around with their holidays. They're not going to be messed around and slaves to the intercounty game. That they're going to finally put their foot down. I'm looking forward to asking Declan exactly what he's going to look for. What I think, just initially, what they're going to do is they're not going to need massive revenue like the GPA to employ lots of people. This is going to be on a volunteer basis, and they're going to basically try and, you know, gauge the perception that's out there with club players around the country. Mm. And if it is that the frustration is there at levels, then they're going to, you know, flex their muscles and say, we're 99% of the population, stop screwing us around.
That's the leverage of a club player. There's actually a story up on site there now as well. The Galway Hurling League final, 2015 final, is taking place on November 5th 2016. The 2016 league has already been played and finished. The final's already done with that.
What so level is this, sorry?
Senior Hurling League.
Jeez.
So it's Capitagal and Tina are in the 2015 final. So obviously they won't get to take the trophy home because there's a new champion for 2016. And that's just sort of, there's a lot of different factors that come under that. They tried to split their championship last year as well and created more fixtures and all. But Jesus, that just shows you sort of the level it goes.
Yeah, look, and there's so many examples of it. I wrote a piece on the side about Dublin and 5 month gap between the first round and the second round. 13-day rule there, it's being ignored. If the only thing this Club Players Association does is enforce the 13-day rule, even if they never can condense, and worst case scenario, they don't condense the intercounty season, they come up against a brick wall. If they get the 13-day rule enforced, then at least there will be a map of a fixture list that club players know exactly when they're playing, and no intercounty manager can do anything because it's in the rules of the association and it's not to be messed with. And, you know, that would be at least some relief. But anyways, we're going to get on to Declan about this later on the show. Finally, before, because I see Ken McGrath is ready to come into the studio, big news for Wexford today, Mikey. You're a Wexford man. You love your Wexford hurling. You love your Wexford football. You have two of the greatest personalities in the GAA over you. This is exciting times to be from Wexford.
We've gone Hollywood, baby. It's really...
Banty McEnany is the news breaking today, is the new Wexford football manager. The managerial merry-go-round.
This is fantastic. It's just, as I was saying to you earlier, it's a good thing a broadband provider sponsors Wexford Park's naming rights, because there's just going to be busloads of journalists coming down for Division 4 football matches. It's going to be
Division
brilliant.
Division 4 is right, yeah. Your box office now, though. They're the highest profile Division 4 team in history of hurling.
And Division football, and then Division 1B in the hurling.
Division it's, football, rather, sorry.
Yeah, so it's... yeah, we're punching above our weights in the managerial stakes.
We've done well, and I was reading quotes from Davy Fitzgerald, who I'm hoping will come on the GAR very soon. We have a request in, so Davy, if you're listening, which I'm not sure you are, if anyone that knows Davy is listening, we want to talk to him. Davy was saying that it's the chairman, his enthusiasm for hurling and his, you know, just optimism sold it to Davy straight away. He sold a Division 4 team to Banty. Banty's not exactly hot property. Like, Davy Fitz is a bigger get, let's be honest about this. But the chairman has gone above and beyond and got two really big managers. I'm wondering what is going to happen for dual players in Wexford. How many do we have? Who wins that argument between Banty and Davy?
Davy.
Really? Banty's contrary too. He's throwing Kildare jerseys on the ground and telling you to run over them.
The most recent one is Lee Chin, and I think he gave it up of his own accord. So you'd definitely be giving it up if Davy in one ear and Banty in the other. Imagine that.
It seems that Banty was in for every job going. Like, he was up and for the
Derry. He was waiting for Wexford, man. Waiting for Wexford.
Yeah, he's the Ulster Luke Dempsey.
Just goes for every job. Tom doesn't seem to get them, but he goes for them, and then Wexford happened to come up, and he's like, well, might as well take them. No offence, Mikey.
He's like a young, hungry manager. You go back down through the divisions and you build yourself back up, and that's how you become a credible manager.
It's like Sven Goran Eriksson going to Notts County.
Yeah, exactly. That's so exactly what it's like.
Carlow first, then Dublin.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully bring Dublin to Clonard, and Banty will have us all trampling all over AIG sponsor logos, and that'll be the end of them.
All right, lads, we leave it there because Ken McGrath's ready to come in to have a chat with us, and he's coming up next. Delighted to say one of the greatest centre half backs, greatest all-rounders ever to play the game of hurling is in the studio with me now, Ken McGrath, to have a chat about his great new autobiography, Hand on Heart. Ken, I suppose to start off, when you look back on your career, you won 3 Munster titles, you won 3 All-Stars, you won a National League, but you lost 7 All-Ireland semi-finals. When you look back on your career, do you look back with a huge amount of pride, or is the overriding emotion regret?
I suppose, like any ex-player, it's probably the feat you look back on at times and go, how did we win that game, or the Ireland final, the way it sticks out to mind, how we didn't perform that day. But I'll be honest, I think we look back on and be proud of what we achieved, foremost at titles in the National League. From where we came from, I think the team done very well. We had no underage success really, bar a few of the older lads back from 92 or 91. But our kind of current crop, when we came through, it was only 3 years since I came on in 96 and Kerry after beating Waterford in the championship in 1993, so we were starting from a low enough out Abe, and to be involved in some of the best games for years in Thurles and Croke Park is, look, you have to take the pride and the enjoyment out of that, you know.
Yeah, reading the book, I kind of split your career into three different parts under three different managers: the early years under Gerald, the glory years under Justin, and then the nightmare years towards the end. If that's fair enough.
No, it is. Yeah,
but like, you know, we'll talk with Gerald first because he was obviously first. He gave you your debut. You know, you were only the same year you played minor, 96, like myself.
Yeah, 96. I remember being in college actually.
Yeah, in Waterford.
But Gerald gave us a start, and he was the Tony Mansfield gave me a start in 96. Gerald came on at the end of 96 for the league. Then it was the league before the Christmas. You remember that time as well.
Yeah.
And look, Gerald was the one. He kind of, the first year was kind of a learning curve for him. See where we're at. See what players were interested in. Probably stepping up to the mark for him. And he really stamped his authority all over that team in 98 on, and the level of professionalism he brought in was unbelievable. And I'll be honest, before Gerald, we were probably, we always knew we had hurlers, but we were kind of floundering a bit, and he really upped it. And to me, he's a massive, massive part in what happened for the next 10, 12 years, you know. And a lot of it was down to Gerald at the start.
Yeah, and it was that professionalism of just training hard and being fit, which maybe you weren't before him. You know, it's basic enough stuff. It reminded me of Mick O'Dwyer's training. Yeah. You know, it's just like run laps, get yourself super fit, and there's a value in that.
Yeah, exactly. Look, you can't beat teams kind of training, you know, yourself training hard together. It kind of builds a spirit. And we were watching the likes of Limerick and Clare and Wexford and these lads, and guess it, in the book, Guinness were sponsoring the championship. We were mad to get involved in that, mad to kind of have a bit of the limelight of it, you know. And we went training crazy for the end of 97, so we got a run at the league in 98, and it kind of kicked on from there a bit. And look, fellas enjoyed that year. We realised that we weren't too far away from it, and that gave us a bit of stuff to go on for the next few years, you know.
Yeah, you went on the Neutron diet in 98. That was your secret, was it?
Jeez. I think often went on the year before. We went on, it was a great crack, I'll be honest. It was probably to get the team together more than anything else, you know. Fellas were in good shape, even going on it. But it really brought us together, and every week you're in getting weighed and fellas having a laugh together. And it brought the team, I said, closer together. And I remember I was working in Norton at the time, and the father dropping out stir fries at 11:30 in the morning. And this
stir fries for breakfast.
Yeah, it was crazy. And the whole factory kind of knew what was happening, and I knew what was going on. But it was a great crack, and it really brought the team together.
Yeah, just something that you could all stick to together. And like, it was new, it was fresh, and you maybe thought that you were doing something other counties weren't.
Exactly. And we had to try something. As I said, we were trying to catch up with these teams that were ahead of us, you know. And it worked for Offaly before. I think they won the league, the Leinster final. I think the league final and the football as well. And we said, if it worked for them lads, we'd try and join in as well, you know. And it done us no harm. We were flying fit early on in the year. I think as it went on, Neutron Diet probably lessened a small bit, but it was definitely a great start for the year for us.
Yeah, and I suppose 98 was the year everybody remembered, you know, the crazy games against Clare, and he had come out of nowhere. Came out of nowhere for most of the country. Did you think you were building towards something that year?
Yeah, we did. Look, I knew we were a million miles away. I was about to be playing in three minor Munster finals. We were always there or thereabouts without making the breakthrough as such, you know. And we knew the caliber likes of Tony, Fergal Hartley, Brian Green. If we really gelled together, we on our day, anything is possible. And the first day against Clare was a real battle, and I think we tore into Clare that day. We had a chance to win it again. Paul Flynn missed the free, and the next day there was a we didn't get a second chance against Clare Day. I suppose, a famous game. It was the game of all the different rows going on and pulling and dragging. There wasn't an awful lot to it. It looked worse than what it was. But it was a mad year, Gerard Nan and Gerald. And to be involved in that, when we look back on it, at the end of the year, we were saying, look, at least we were involved in them high-profile games, and it gave us a lift to drive it on, you know.
It whetted your appetite.
It did. I was only 20 at the time, and I was mad for more.
Yeah, you said in the book that you didn't realise how vicious it was on the field. Did you have your eyes closed?
I remember I went to Shawnee McMahon, and Shawnee would be tough as nails now, absolutely tough as nails. But
he wouldn't get involved in that.
No, we were kind of half-filled messing around a bit and kind of trying to drag fellas away, but nothing towards that you wouldn't see in club anyway, you know.
Yeah, and Shawnee, like, I mean, you had clean Shawnee earlier on that year in the league, but Shawnee probably wintered well, as you probably would have come to realise later on in your career.
Yeah, that's what I say. I marked Shawnee, I think it was just before the league, week before we played the league. And Shawnee was only getting up to speed, probably fitness levels. And I was flying at the time, 20 years of age. I think I was only 19 then, 20. And I gave him a bit of a roasting. But as I said later on, he had the last laugh. And look, Shawnee to me is one of the best players I've ever played against. And as my career went on, I'd know when I had to peak. And at that time, I was flying fit. Shawnee was only getting ready for championship, you know. And it was probably a false old dawn for me.
Yeah, that's it. But you've been such a brilliant kind of underage player coming up, and you'd made your debut at such a young age. you thought you'd come straight up to senior and just, you know, start dominating games and winning them on your own, you know, when that's not the reality of it. And there's a part in the book where Gerald has to pull you, like, you're sitting on a wall after breaking even with Johnny McMahon, one of the greatest centre backs ever to play the game, and you're really disappointed with yourself. But, you know, he taught you a bit of a lesson.
Yeah, I remember that. And I suppose that was my problem starting off in my career. I always wanted to be a 9 out of 10 in games or be close to man of the match every game. That can't happen. Like, you're up against seasoned players. I was playing centre forward on Kieran Carey, Shawnee McMahon, Brian Corcoran, and these lads weren't going to give me anything. And I suppose I had a bit of reputation coming through, and they were seasoned hurlers. And you know yourself, when you get older and you're playing senior championship for a long time, the last thing you want to do is the young fella to get a better of you. And I remember Gerald sat me down and I had a bit of a face on me. We were out of a few drinks, I remember, at the time, and he was saying, cop on, basically, you know, grow up a bit. You can't play that every game. You done decent, get back for the next day, you know. And it was a nice little thing to get. And now, it would have taken me still a couple of years to really to stop, if it wasn't playing so well, to kind of just relax and do a job for the team, you know. And that took a couple of years.
Yeah, just something that sticks in your memory is that little chat. Yeah, another thing that sticks in your memory, which I thought was a great one, was you gave Frampton a bit of a dunt as he was coming when you scored a point with Mount Zion.
Yeah.
And he just humiliated him. He said, you're a bit too young for that kind of career.
My cousin Moose, Jamie O'Mara, got a great goal in I think it was the first game in 95 in the county final. And I was up midfield, a bit wound up, and I gave Frampton a bit of a shoulder going past, and he just looked at me and said, cop on, you're too young for that. And he was right. I couldn't go after him, I couldn't say anything to him. And look, you're learning from experience, you know. And I probably would have done the same to myself a few years later to some younger lad.
You did get well fired up on the field, though, you know. That was part of what made you a great player. And another classic little anecdote in it was, you'd caught a ball during the glory years, which we're going to move on to in a minute, in the Munster final against Cork. You won a free. You had the game won, you knew this was it. You know, when you poked it down, it was going to be the game over. And Sully said something to you, The Rock, as he was running past you. And what the hell did you say? Great catch, Ken.
Yeah. Look, aggression was a part of my game. When I lost aggression when I got older, I wasn't half the player, in all fairness. But at the time, I remember, it was massive crowds, your adrenaline is pumping, and I caught that ball. And I thought Sully wanted to say something. And I went back at him, he just said, great catch. And I said, thanks. And out of great respect for Sully, I hope he'd be the same for me. We were playing minor and that underage, growing up and stuff, you know, and that's a part of it. And I think that was a part of the game, definitely, back in the 2000s, you know.
You see, there was a lot of mutual respect between that Cork team and your team. Like, I think he broke even for all around that
kind of,
you know.
But they have two all there.
Some of them have three. That's the killing part about it, I suppose, for you, that you were able to match them in some huge games. But when it came down to All-Ireland semi-finals, there was some sort of a block.
Yeah, like, that's the killer. And that's what maybe you'd sit back and look back at your career and say, geez, how did we actually do that? Massive games of Cork, and yet they won two in a row in 04 and 05, and some of them won 99 as well. And we're left kind of scratching ourselves, saying we haven't even won to our name, you know. But as I said to you, there's no point in, if I look back, I'm worried about that the whole time. You never even go to work today.
Ah, you would, yeah. You'd have yourself well beaten up. Yeah. Some of the training under Gerald was very, very basic. You were doing circuit training in toilets. You were using the frames of the doors for chin-ups. People won't even realise this was the reality.
Poor stuff, like Rocky out in the mountains and your man doing all the scientific stuff. But we a lot of the side pitch, the back of Dungarvan, it's only for training, really. And we done everything there, and it was savage. You know yourself, playing back in the 90s, some of the training was crazy. There's no sports science there, you know. But look, it's what we needed at the time. It's what we needed.
Yeah, teams were kind of learning as they're going along. There was no science behind it.
Killing this as we go along.
You could be doing press-ups before a championship match.
Yeah, it was mad. But look, we were mad. I said, mad to join on with this kind of hurling thing that was taking off. And we were a couple of years behind it, so we were doing any sort of training, anything to help us, you know.
Yeah. Why do you think he didn't build on 98 under Gerald? He eventually went at the end of 2001, wasn't it?
But
you hadn't built on 98 at all. You'd been losing in Munster, you know, early.
Yeah, we were kind of unlucky, I suppose. 99, a new kind of Cork team came through. We beat Limerick in the first round, probably a bit too cocky into a Cork. And Waterford can't afford to be cocky against Cork, and they caught us one all in that year. 2000, back then you lost the first game, you were gone. No second chance. And I feel that team, if they had second chances, would have gotten back and getting their heads around it. And to be honest, we left Gerald down in the end. 2001, we were 11 points up against Limerick and threw away a win, you know. And if we'd get one win on the time, we could have driven on again. But maybe things weren't being done right by every player on it at the time, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing about Waterford. Like, you were capable of being brilliant, but you're also capable of throwing away a lead. Like against Wexford in the qualifiers, remember earlier, breaking my heart watching it, going, how the hell have they lost this game? But that was kind of, I don't know, kind of the draw about you, that you didn't really know what was going to happen.
Yeah, it was a draw for fellas outside of the county, but what a draw for us. I remember a time saying after that Wexford game, how did we actually lose that?
Yeah.
Or the Limerick game, and I was captain in 2001, and saying, how did we lose that? You know, and you're saying that was the flaw in that team as well. And I suppose that's why a lot of lads from other counties would like that team and the way we played. But if you're probably from a traditional county like Cork and Kenny, you'd be pulling your hair out with us, you know.
Yeah, 99 was the year you felt that you came of age that year. I think in the two games you scored 9 from play, and Corcoran was taken off you, and you went, right, no more breaking even now with Shawnee McMahon. Yeah. I'm actually here. I'm here now as a main player.
Yeah, I thought so. 98, I got an Ulster nomination in 98. I was probably steep enough to get it. I wasn't overly happy my second half of the season. 99, 2000, 2001 were lean years for us, but I felt I was flying. And they were years that really helped me develop for the further years on when Justin came in. And I got confidence myself from it. You have to take whatever you can out of the championship. If you lose, you have to take your own performance at times from it, and that's what I done. I had to, I had no choice, you know.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. And was in the 2000 you did an awful job on your ankle. Like, I think your career is blighted with injuries. Now, you didn't miss an awful lot of hurling out of it. Did at the end. You were lucky enough that way they landed, you seemed to get a lot of injections involved as well.
I say, Paul, I came in, you want to read my book? I was only laughing the other day saying, Jersey, I'd be on the Independent next week. But
I was thinking the same thing. Diphenhydramine tablets.
Jesus, that's tame. But no, we 2000, destroyed my ankle, and I remember saying, coming off the pitch in the second half, saying, I shouldn't be coming off here. But I couldn't walk.
Yeah.
Until I went in the next day, and every ligament was gone. My skin was only holding together. But I got back for the county final that year, and my only game I ever missed for Waterford was 2008 championship, you know. That was the first game in all that time I missed. So I kind of got injuries, but got over them fast, but probably kept myself coming back.
Yeah, you came back maybe a little bit too soon. Yeah. When Justin took over, it took you a while to actually think, what's this lad at? Like, you're so used to all the laps and the running and being in top shape. Yeah. He's like, don't worry, lads, you'll be all right for the championship. And you're out swinging hurls, practicing your wrists like under 12s.
Yeah, and we were kind of saying, right, what's happening here? And we got to a certain level with Gerald, and we didn't kick on, but we were still probably in the top 6 or 7 teams every year, if not even up further. And we were saying, what's happening here? Like, we were just swinging hurlies like you do under 9 or under 10, but it was all a plan from Justin. At the time, we didn't know it. We lost the game against Dublin, and there was murder in the dressing room, you know, but he was calm enough. And by the time May came in, and he kind of kicked on the pitch for training, I remember times that summer saying, jeez, that was unbelievable hurling, unbelievable. The horn he got out was, I tell you, was super, super.
Right, and it's all just kind of going back to the skills, because what jumps out to me is James Horan with Mayo. He went back to basics with them. Like, at inter-county levels, managers think you know it all and you have all the skills, when a lot of players actually don't. They just get through because they're really good at one thing rather than having a nice round
game. Yeah, exactly. No, as you said, like Kilkenny lads, what they're probably famous for is in the basics well every time, and we kind of went back to that, and all hurling, but speed of hurling, fast hurling, movement, stuff that suited Waterford, stuff that we probably done for the next 5, 6, 7 years. Some of the hurling we played in that period was unbelievable. As you said, our consistency was our problem. We often gave away goals. We often might turn up for a game, but any certain day, we were a joy to watch, you know, and that was all to do with Justin, what he kind of preached, hurling, you know.
Yeah, and do you think that's kind of gone out of the game a little bit now, you know, that focus on skill?
Yeah, it is, but I tell you, Tip brought it back this year. If you look at our final, was super. The 2 Waterford games against Kilkenny was kind of back to skill again, you know, and pace of hurling. And I think that's the way it's going to go again. Every game, there's things that pop up every now and again in different eras or different periods of a game. And the last few years maybe was a defensive structure and stuff, and I for one think Waterford are at their best when we're going at teams. Ernie showed that for us this year. The senior showed it in the 2 games. And look, that's my opinion. A lot of people disagree with me. A lot of people in my own county would disagree with me, but I think that's our best way of winning Ireland.
Yeah, Austin Gleeson's obviously your club. Yeah. I was reading in the book where you didn't really care what hurl you used. It was just real natural with you. And I interviewed Austin, and he was telling me he doesn't practice the sidelines really at all. He just he's able to do them.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what he does.
You pulled a hurley out of a skip one time and used it. You know,
we're up in Tyrone with Tyrone Waterford, and we're the weekend away, and we're playing a challenge game in some Dublin club, and his brother was Roy was on the panel and he found his hurdle. You'd like that. It was heavy antique. And that heavy antique at the time I would have used. Now, before Justin came in and he started kind of doctoring our hurdles a bit and getting them nice, and that's what I suppose helped us as well, you know. But before that, I'd use anything that was heavy and fairly thick, you know.
Yeah, Gleeson's the new Ken McGrath, really, anyways. That's what most people say.
Yeah, look, he's a brilliant player. He's a brilliant player. I managed him this year. We lost semi final last week. He've everything. He've everything, in all fairness. Yeah. And if he
keeps, and an all rounder, too.
An all rounder. He can play anywhere. And I said it before and I say it again. He's exciting the crowd. He excites people. You go to watch him. And I think that's what it should be about as well. It can't be all sterile. Everyone can't be the same type of hurler. That's not what sport or hurling is about, to me anyway. And I think he epitomises that, you know.
Yeah, it was the first Munster title he won, 2002, where he surprised Tipperary as well. Yeah. You know, I think, what did you score? Seven points play and got man of the match.
Yeah.
But you're describing the dressing room before that match where you had a sense that, you know, those kind of nerves from 98 seemed to be gone, and there was a feeling that, you know, we're going to win this one.
Yeah, there was a real feeling that day of, look, we just have to turn up and we're ready for this, you know. And I remember thinking myself, I was 24, I was having poor the Munster final before that, and that's something I always tried to do. If I was poor in a certain game, trying to redeem it, and I remember saying, look, I wasn't nervous, but I put myself in a week of pressure to play well, because the team needed me, you know. And I think everyone was in the same boat, and that day everything clicked, and the second half was unbelievable.
Yeah, what was the feeling? Yeah, there's a picture of you soaked down to your knees on the final whistle. Yeah, just disbelief.
It looked 39 years since we won it, and for us it was like a mini All-Ireland, and them few days were unbelievable, and the kind of feeling you get from that, and it kind of lifts you on for the next few years in all fairness. But we felt at the time that we were hurling well enough to carry on, and we felt we were going to have a nice say in that championship that year. Now, we didn't deal with the 6 weeks well after that.
And you celebrated it a bit. You
probably celebrated too much, and the county celebrated too much.
That's understandable too.
Yeah, and
though,
I said that
it?
In the book as well. I think it was a bit over the top. I remember there was two open top stuff on Sunday and Monday, and like that's
the second one. I take Kilkenny
and Cork were back then were laughing at us, you know. But that's what we done. We went back training on a Friday. There was a bit of a circus, but we knuckled down okay. But I think maybe the whole thing probably caught up with us in the end, and the 6 weeks killed us. And the clear was a game you want to forget, you know.
Yeah, and you obviously beat Cork then in 2004. You won another one in 2007. You know, is there any standout one? Is it your first one? I'm not even going to mention the 2010 one.
Yeah, oh, geez. 2004 to me, to beat Cork in the Munster final in the Pack Stadium. Father played in Munster Finals, got hammered by 30 points. So
and you down a man too.
Down a man, played some of our best hurling that second half. It was a game that stand up in any game now or any year, I think. And that was unbelievable match. And it was a game you actually enjoy. You know, games you're playing in big games and you don't feel like it's a big game. There's just, you're playing away legs out the back yard. And that was a game that was like that for me. And I loved it. Loved every minute of it.
Yeah, that's one that a lot of people remember. You know, the Flynn goal. Like, it looked like it was slipping away from you, and you pulled it out. And that was almost like, if your character was ever doubted after that one, you know, those questions stopped being asked.
Yeah, look, our character was always probably questioned, but I always feel, and I say the same about Mayo, to keep coming back is harder. Look, I know what it's like at the opposite side of Mount Sinai. We won 6 county titles in 8 years, and it was easy comeback. But when we have won all Ireland and we kept on coming back at the semi-final defeats, that's character to me.
Yeah.
And I honestly stand over that. I think that's character. And our team was questioned at times that we lacked bottle or whatever. But if you stand in our shoes and see who we're up against and how we kept on coming back, I think that's character, you know.
Yeah, I think a lot of people just think you have to be winning, you know, all Ireland to have character.
Yeah, and you don't. And I think the same about Mayo. Them lads keep on coming back and keep trying and eventually, hopefully, they'll get their rewards like us as well.
Yeah. Tell me between 2007, because you have 2007 down as the best, you know, an unbelievable year that everything was going right. You won the league, then you won the Munster, and you were on the crest of a wave.
Yeah.
And how things went from being so good that year to Justin losing his job the following year. Like, how could the standards have slipped? And was it Justin's fault or was it your fault? And, you know.
A mixture of everything, right? Everybody probably wasn't doing what they should have been doing 100%. Justin did slip. I said in the book at the time, and it's a hard few pages to even write about, because you have to be very delicate in what you're saying. And I just felt the probably best time for Justin to go was after 07. I think we brought us as far as he could.
That Limerick defeat knocked the stuffing out a lot.
It did knock the stuffing out of the team. I didn't see that defeat coming. I thought we were primed for that match. After beating Cork in a replay, things were flying, and
yeah.
really, was that four semi-finals under Justin after losing? And I think maybe it was the time to maybe take a stand back. And but look, as a player, you have to take the selfish action at times, and we done that, and we stuck together. It's not a nice thing to do. It's a horrible thing to do, but you know yourself as a player, Colm, and I'm managing the boys now. I would have feeling hurt of that as a manager, I'm sure. He still kind of resents what happened, but we felt at the time our season was gone. I was 30, a few of the lads were older, and you have to say, right, if we either were right off this season or try and redeem it, and that's what we've done, you know.
You described it as stabbing him in the back in the book. Do you still feel like
I
that?
I do, because I'll be honest, he was after giving us so much and doing so much for us, but I felt we had no choice either. I honestly do. I stand over that. I felt we had no choice. I felt.
So was he just making different decisions? I know he gave you a 3-week break that you didn't agree with, but like, I mean, what else was he doing that would have made you think? You
the
know,
same level of say even preparation wasn't there. Just small little things. Even just the days of games, the days of training, even the training camp we had over in Portugal wasn't at the same level. Was nowhere near the same level what we've been used to, and we felt it was slipping beyond repair, if you know what I mean. And it was a very hard decision. I remember coming out of the Majestic one day, I think it was half two in the night, saying, "Ah, look what we're doing here." And when the boys rang me first to say there's a bit of old story, I honestly said on the Monday, my mother's house, "I'll pack it in, I've enough of this shite," you know. And that's the way I felt. But the more fellas talked about it, the more I heard from different lads, I just said, right, look, if that's, we'll all go in the one direction, you know.
Yeah, was it the majority of lads that wanted him out, like, on the periphery of the team? Because that's natural in most panels as well, or was it?
No, I'll be honest, it was fairly high. I don't know the exact vote, that's the truth. Right. I don't know the exact vote, but it was fairly high. I would have been close to him. I would have gotten on well with him. I still have massive respect for him, but it was a hurling decision. We felt it was a team's decision that we had to do, you know.
Yeah, but you had been blind to these mumblings.
I had. When you're playing yourself, I was getting my game. I was centre back or centre forward for years with him. Everything was going grand, and at times you're in a bit of a bubble when you're playing. You don't see what's going on behind it. Now I saw it. 2009, 2010. What was happening when I wasn't getting my game? But you wouldn't even know how hard some of the boys are feeling, you know. Until we were there. It was a few meetings. And.
And there was fellas on the starting team that were, you know, adamant that he'd taken you.
We all knew, I'll be honest. As a group, we all felt it was time to go. We did. We honestly did, yeah. But how do you say that to a man who brought you so far? Or how do you ever end the relationship, you know?
Yeah, on a personal level, you know, it's obviously difficult.
Yeah, and how do you, like, and that's the truth. How do you end the relationship that's broke, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no easy way of doing it.
And you say you haven't been in contact with him ever since?
No. No.
Have you tried to contact him?
I kind of left it off, to be honest. I didn't know what to do. I suppose a lot of players were the same. We often talked about him. We often spoke of him. I often spoke at home at dawn, saying, I wonder how he feels about us, or, you know, what way is he with us, you know, because it's a horrible way to be.
Like you regret doing it.
I tell you, I don't regret. I think the decision had to be made, but I don't think it should be our decision. I think if Justin had stepped away in 07, everything would have been grand, you know.
Yeah, maybe.
But I think it had to be done. I honestly think it had to be done
for hurling. Yeah, for hurling.
For that year, yeah, I think it had to be done.
And he wrote a piece in the programme for your charity match.
Yeah,
and you didn't contact him. No, I probably should. Ken, will you give the man a ring?
I know. I probably. Yeah.
Don, have a word with Ken here.
No, I should have. And look, it's a regret. If you look at me book, I probably didn't ring a few people I should have ringed over the years, you know. And maybe that's a trait I have, you know.
I think it is a trait. I don't think you like confrontation, do you? Because Jerry Quinn is jumping to mind after the incident with his hand.
Yeah.
And you're on the All-Star trip with him and you just completely swerved him. You didn't
it was the All-Star night. And,
All-Star night, that was it.
And look, the book, I said what I done. Not proud of what I done. Or I don't... I wouldn't back up what I'd done again. How can you back up what I'd done to Jerry Quinn? But no, I just left it run, you know. And it's probably a childish way of doing things, but at the time, that's what happened, you know.
Yeah. That Jerry Quinn thing is interesting because, like, I mean, you gave him fair warning and you live by the sword, you die by the sword. And, like, I never played hurling, but I'm sure that's, you know, like, I don't know how you do it, but, like, you know, you sort it out yourself if you're getting the butt of a hurl or a hurl into the back, and that's the way it is. He got back for the final.
Yeah.
He never mentioned your name, so he comes out of it, you know, fairly sound as well. Yeah. So, like, you know, all in all, I don't really blame either the two of you. Really.
Yeah, I know. Look, I overreacted. As I said in the book, that probably was in me the odd time, but it's all right. Anything was possible at times, you know. And I didn't mean to injure the young fella. I didn't mean for him to miss the Aran Final. Didn't he play that? He played decent. The Aran Final, he came back. But as I said, you live by the sword, you die by the sword at times. And it was an overreaction on my part. But I had to put it in the book. If I didn't put it in the book, I wouldn't be true to myself, you know.
Yeah.
And I tried to cover it in the best way. I like Jerry have no say in what I'm writing in the book. And I tried to, he could easily spilling the beans on me.
He named you at the time, you were in trouble.
And he could have, and I was probably being selfish again, wanting to play for the club and stuff, you know. And but look, it was a hard time again, but it was all brought on by myself, really. Yeah,
yeah. We'll move on to the nightmare years now, which this is what I call them.
Yeah.
You know, Justin obviously left, and then all of a sudden you land to training one night, and there's Davey on the sideline.
Yeah.
And what jumped out at me massively when I was reading the book is, first conversation, how would you feel about full back? Like, there had to be warning kind of signs. Yeah. You just straight away, no problem, Davey.
I said no problem, and I was only coming back from getting a cartilage on my knee. I missed the Clare game and I was limping around training. The usual for them few years, limping around, sucking on Dyphine, doing everything I could to try and play. And I said, I'll solve that. I remember my head saying, I'll solve that, no problem. I felt there was a problem in full back or whatever. And I said, I'll do that. No, I was the all-star centre-back from the year before, centre-back.
See, that's the bizarre
thing. And I was all-star centre-back in 07, had my most consistent year, and I played once there since that.
So why did he explain that he wanted to move the all-star, like arguably the best centre-back of his generation, to full-back? Like, what was the explanation? Or did
he probably said, no, I didn't really look for one. He probably said, look, there's a problem here that he thought maybe I was flexible enough to do that. And at the time, I was probably big headed enough to think I was able to do it, if you know what I mean, in hurling terms. And I quickly realised I wasn't.
Yeah, well, he clipped your wings, really. Your wings were clipped because you found yourself dogging lads in the full back line. That's not me.
I'd rather hurl all day. And remember one stage, Martin Joe Berg and the young fella, I was at the Playmail the week before, and I pulled and dragging and grab and in the corner, and that wasn't me at all. And you know, I didn't enjoy it. And I loved the freedom of centre back, loved the freedom of hurling. To me, that's what the game was about, you know. I said, we went up to Clare for a weekend away, and Mark Don Kelly's space in front of me destroyed me. And I remember saying, I'm not here, I'm going to get destroyed up against him. And the lads quickly realised that and said, right, we'll abandon that. Now, in the three games, I didn't concede a score. So
that's because you were dragging out of his their jerseys. But you said later on in your career, you started doing a bit more mouthing on the field, and it was out of frustration. And, you know, at early in your career, you wouldn't get involved in that. But I suppose when the legs get a little bit tired, you described yourself as an old 30-year-old, which I thought was, you know, it was a funny way of describing it, because 30 isn't old, but because of your body, you'd been on the go for so long, you were an aged 30.
I'll be honest. Even county, I would never mouth, because you wouldn't have time to mouth. But even club, I wouldn't have been that bad. I wouldn't have been bad at all, and no one probably would say he was a mouth. But anytime I ever did say that, and I knew I was in trouble or doing stuff at night, you know, and I said for years I wouldn't open my mouth. I marked Hartley for years in county finals too. It was just bounce of one another, and that was it. And we were great friends outside of it. But in the last couple of years, we were winning stuff at the club, and if there was a comment in the game, I'd say something back before, that was never an issue, and different things of that, you know.
And did you feel that wasn't putting you off your game, or it was just
No, because it wasn't a big deal. Like, I wasn't constantly doing it at all. Like, I wasn't like, say, some of the Gaelic lads doing it in there. Wasn't that at all. But before, I would never even melt back. I wouldn't even say retaliate with a word back. And at the last year or two, I could have done one or two, you know.
Yeah, the miss hit free in 2008. You said in the book, that game finished me, really. It might sound overdramatic or over the top, but we probably should have gotten counselling after the 2008 final.
Yeah, I know
that. Do you really think that?
Yeah, I honestly do. For sports, obviously, sports, psychology, whatever, or counselling after, because we were building up our whole career for that. I was playing 12, 13 years senior, consistent enough for all them years. And you're getting to the big show as such, Ireland final, and we went out and performed like that. I performed that myself, and it was a nightmare for all of us. But I said, I questioned taking a free that day. That's simple stuff you'd never question ever again. And I think personally, as a senior, I don't know how that finished me.
Why did you miss hit the free? Concentration, nerves?
I remember head was scrambled, I suppose. I remember saying, I'll put this over, I need to get a point on the board, get us back in the game. I wasn't thinking just before that I miss hit the oak. The next free, I was saying, right, I have to rise this ball. Stuff you've done since you're 4 and 5.
My God.
The head was gone, I suppose. And I think the majority of players will tell you that day our heads went. And when you're getting better in a final like that, it can happen. It happens in a lot of sports. But that day was an extraordinary day. And when your head goes, you won't get it back, especially against Kilkenny.
Yeah. And in hindsight, you thought you were going well going into that final. But when you look at it, you'd lost in Munster, you'd beaten Offaly and Wexford, who weren't at their best. You know, you got over Tipperary then with a good win. It wasn't a Waterford team that, you know, had been flying it like 3 or 4 years earlier.
No, yeah, exactly.
Or even in 07.
No, I'll be honest, we were much more better equipped from 02 to 07. I honestly feel if we got to the Ireland final in them 4 or 5 years, we would have performing well. And we got to it maybe by default, and we played like that then, you know.
Yeah. So there were 6 semi-finals in all.
Yeah, I think
the Kilkenny ones, maybe the ones that got away. The one definitely that jumps out at me was against Kilkenny in 04.
That was a
great chance. And even in 98, it was a point
in 98, probably wasn't Kilkenny's best team, a bit more experienced that day, could have tipped us over the edge. 2004, they got 3 goals starting off, and we never clawed it back. It was a day we only performed up to a certain. Flynn was brilliant the same day. The rest of us were okay without being brilliant, and that was the problem. I think we was 3-12 to 18 points. And 06 Ireland semi final against Cork, lost by a point, absolute disaster. And we'll win that game up to 64th, 65th minute. Caught Nocton came on, got 1-1, and we fought back well that day. That was a day. Look, it's Brian Corcoran said in his book, it was a massive, massive day. That game was built up so much for both teams, and we performed well that day. We were just very, very unlucky. Cusack stopped the ball, my free going over, and like that don't happen too much in hurling, you know. And we were getting that kind of luck, you know.
Yeah, just it's mad that how bad luck you got when it came down to that. Like it's like nearly like Mayo. Like just give them a break,
give us a break. And that was the problem. And look, if you look at 98 a point, 02 a goal, 04 a goal, 06 a point, 07 against Limerick, we were flying. The draw against Cork. We played the following week, 3 games on the trot, probably on too much of a high going into it, and Limerick just tore into us. We came back to a point twice, and we gave away a few goals at the end. We got 5 goals, I think.
5 goals,
I think we lost by 5 in the end. And that, to me, that's our hardest defeat.
Yeah, that knocked the stuff inside of you.
We were flying that year. I couldn't see us getting bet, you know.
Talk to us about being a sub under Davey, because I've experienced being a sub, and I was an awful sub. You didn't want me around if I was a sub, because I didn't see the point. And you said the same thing in the book. You just didn't see the point in doing the training and not getting any reward for it, especially when you come from being a starter a lot of your career. Yeah. Very, very difficult to get your head around.
No, I found it hard, and I honestly say hats off to lads that can do it. I remember at times missed the whole 9, I was injured. 2010, not getting a game, sitting on the sideline, probably watching hurling. That was, we weren't playing our best hurling. We won the Munster Championship, and the Munster final was poor the second day. So I was actually pulling my hair out on the sideline, mad to get on. And I would have loved to play them games against Cork under lights, something torless. And when I saw the team fighting so hard, I done nothing for that Munster Championship. I think I got 2 or 3 minutes in that Munster final replay, and I felt empty afterwards. And I think every player should feel the same. You should feel empty if you only done 2 or 3 minutes. I didn't help the boys in 1% of them in that Munster final, you know. And I felt empty afterwards. I felt sad. I felt angry. And that's only natural, I think. You know,
You said in the book you were able to hide that, and on the outside you were trying to help lads in the dressing room. Inside, it was killing you.
Yeah, hiding it in training. That Munster final replay, I really found it hard to hide it. I'll be honest with you. Going into extra time, and you're still not getting a run. And I remember in half time and extra time in the dressing room, saying, "Oh, I'm going off me actually head here." Like I would do anything to help the boys out that night.
Isn't it weird that you're almost hoping somebody makes a mistake that you get the nod, when like then you're just thinking, why would I think something like
that? That's only natural. Yeah. And I remember times that year saying, "Oh, I have to go on here now. I'd be grand out there. I mean, back or wing or wherever I was going to be put." And but I think that's only being competitive, and that's only been what made me for most of my career. And if I was happy being a sub, what was the point, like, you know? But I always trained hard. I always went in. I always tried to help the young lads, and that's the truth. And the lads will say that at times I didn't agree why I wasn't coming on, or I didn't agree why I didn't come on earlier, but it never stopped me from training hard and mixing in with the lads.
Yeah, you reacted badly when you came on against Clare, wasn't it? You scored the point and you started ranting at the sideline. What were you saying? Like, now, David.
Oh, look, I know what I was saying.
You know what you were saying.
I can't put it in the book. I can't put it here. But I remember being pulled in. I remember saying, oh, I was like a dog after the game. And I remember it was my first game of Watton starting for Waterford. And I came on and I got a good score. And I remember going to train on Tuesday, and the boys wanted to have me in the middle of the pitch, and I was like, oh, right, what am I going to say here? And I kind of said, look, I think you're judging me on, say, the last year or two when I was injured. I think I'm going okay now. Judge me on now and not what your preconceived ideas are of me the last few years. And they said they would, and we kind of agreed that won't happen again, just move on a bit now. But And I thought it did maybe for a Munster final, but the replay I didn't. I saw 2 or 3 minutes again. I got a bit of time in the first game.
In the first game, that was the thing. And another thing definitely jumped out at me, and I felt sympathy for you, was the replay or the drawn match. You came on, you thought you played well, and then you're pulled up in the video to say, here, look, those clearances, or you're not looking at where they're going or something, and that was your game all your life.
I remember I picked and hit a ball in front of a new stand in Torles, and I hit it up, I think 70 or 80 yards, and that was what I was doing since I was 17.
Yeah.
And that was highlighted in the training on Tuesday. And I was happy with my performance. I thought I contributed something to the lads. I gave the ball in from Milan to get fouled for the goal the last minute. I won another free. I gave another pass up the sideline. And I was saying, I think I've done 5 decent things in the game. I was even counting them at that stage. You know, myself, that's not right.
That was desperation.
That's desperation. Yeah, yeah. I remember saying, I was happy enough, and I kind of skipped in the training on Tuesday, and I was pulled over, and I went, ah, that's me done, you know.
You just knew the writing was on the wall.
I knew the writing was on the wall for the replay anyway, yeah.
Yeah, and you knew the writing was on the wall with your career then, really, after that year, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Look, I was nowhere near the player I was. I said, when you're questioning players that you wouldn't question Markham before, or when you're questioning doing things that was natural to you, I think it's like golf lads there now, when they question standing over a putt or driving, they question everything, or the lads throwing at darts and they're afraid to leave go of the darts, and everything was so natural. I felt everything was so natural when I was playing in my prime. I was questioning everything. I knew it wasn't right, but I went out with a bit of a high against Tip, and I was happy enough for that.
Yeah, it's incredible that, like, Ken McGrath, after all you did, are actually coming on as a sub and saying, I did 5 things there, and actually you know,
yeah,
like,
I know that's I remember saying to Don, I remember going home and saying, I think I've done okay, how'd you think I've done? Yeah, I'd be asking them, like, you know, that's not right, but no. That's the way it was at that time. My confidence was shot.
It's gone.
Yeah, and I was mad to try and get in. I mean, you're so used to playing. I was playing for 12, 13 years solid, one of the main lads on the team. But look, looking back, and in hindsight, they were probably right in some of the stuff they done. I wasn't nowhere near the player I was, you know.
Yeah.
But that's hard to admit at the time.
It is when you're inside it. So how is life now? It looks like it's going really well. You're in a house full of women. On the Sunday game, manager of your club who you love, a young manager. So life seems to be treating you very well.
No, look, it's great. Say the 3 girls at home. Don, look, everything's going well. I'm working with Owen and me and Bean Coffee. Yeah. We're flying in that as well.
It's your favourite of your 100 jobs.
Yeah, that's the thing. I have a CV there now. It's like it's as big as me book. But it's everything's going well. I enjoyed the bits on the Sunday game. I got a few games this year. I enjoyed it. I try to say it as it is and try to be myself in it, you know. But look, thankfully everything's going well. Well overall, the old heart scares and all that as well. So look, in general, life is good, and I'm very happy.
I didn't want to touch on the heart scares because I wanted to celebrate a great career rather than finish it on a downer like that. But listen, best of luck for the future, and we'll be watching out for Mount Sion's results. You haven't been going great. We're a new, young, fresh manager. you can get back to county titles again.
Yeah, no, we lost semi-final last Sunday, so we had a good run. We had a good 6-7 weeks. We enjoyed it, with the spirit back in the club again. We're rebuilding, and look, we'll be back. But no, I enjoyed this. It's 2 years done now. She's telling me I'm kind of finished, but we'll have a chat about that. You never know. Thanks, Con.
Listen, Ken, thanks very much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Up next, we'll talk to Declan Brennan about the new Club Players Association.
You ready? Let's go.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show didn't look great. There was maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out Terry were unlucky to lose, like. Let's go. 10% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name.
AIB, backing club and county.
All right, delighted to say Declan Brennan, former Monaghan selector, 4-time county champion as a manager with Clontibret, also been involved with Sigerson Cup with DCU, so very well qualified to see how things work at all levels of the GEA. And Declan, over the weekend you've set the wheels in motion, well, you've gone public about it anyways, of starting a club players association. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I suppose my intention is, it's not necessarily Declan Brennan's initiating a process to put a body in place. What we have done is, there's a group of people who have come together, whether they have contacted me over a period of time and I have contacted them, people that I respect, to get involved, and we're putting a process in place to come together over the next week, and we're going to announce, I suppose, our mission statement in a fortnight's time, bring everybody together and give advice to the club players of Ireland.
Do you have any idea what that statement will include?
It's probably a very simple statement. We want to bring the club players' life back. We want, and that includes the county. For a situation, we need to condense the season to give the life back, because physically and mentally, it's been very draining, especially on our players that are playing maybe O'Bourne Cup, then going into county, then club, maybe university. You have your 16-year-old that's playing McGrory, then he's playing schools after Christmas, then he's going into county minors, then he's playing club. So I just think there's a need to condense the fixture list, and unfortunately you've Park Duffy and our president that have been trying to change things in only a small way, and they've been hitting so much black tape and discontent. I think that the reality is that so many people are removed from what the feeling is on the ground.
Yeah, you've had a massive response since you went public with this.
I've been involved in a lot of things. I've never seen anything like it in my life. People would say that... from hurling people to football people to lady footballers, camogie players, the people that's making the tea after training for the club player, to the man that's taking the player down to training at night, to the person that's washing the jerseys, I've got lines and lines of emails and Facebook messages and phone calls and texts saying, this has to happen, this has to change. The county players actually want it, because their year is too long. People has done a lot of good work to get the situation of the county players getting more than he used to. But the reality is mind and body is suffering, both short term and long term. I see it. 15 years, we'll be looking like our armed forces a number of years ago, where they were suing from having hearing aids, etc. I can see a situation that some parents are going to say, my son has been playing 10 years constantly. He's absolutely wrecked. He's been playing 7 nights a week. He's been pulled out, and we're going to sue. When you were playing, Colin, when I was playing, I was fortunate to play county minors for 3 years. You were coming out 16 years of age to play county minors. Now they're taking them at 12 years of age into development squads, out of their club, their local peers in the community. I think just the whole heart of the organisation has been dragged down. And listen, the administrators of Croke Park know this. And in fairness, there's so much going on in the background that hasn't come to light yet, that things and committees that have been set up by Park Duffy and the president, and a lot of good work and data put together, and they're trying and they're working. What we're doing is, we're not craving confrontation. We're putting the thing is that we're going to rally the troops, and if there's something as a body that we agree with, we will back it to the hilt, and we'll put forward our views and try and make a difference short term. Because reality, whether this association has been 100 years, I think what happens in the next year is going to have serious ratification for the association going forward, because it's not going to stick at the pace it has. We're losing a lot of good people to it.
Yeah, I think most people would agree something needs to be done. You said in a Facebook statement that there will be a national meeting coming in the coming weeks. Logistically, Declan, how hard is that to organise? Because, you know, the GPA have got 32 counties. You've got 32 counties with a multitude of clubs within those counties. So what representation from every county are you looking at?
It's very simple. There's a group of people that I have contacted that I trust. Then there's other people that I respect and know about and would have communication with that have come forward. We aim to get 15 to 25 people in the one room, which we have and been communicating already. The situation that will come from that, we will come out, we'll give our views, this is where we want to go, and then we'll put logistic things in place to rally the troops that gives everybody an opportunity to get involved and get behind, create a momentum, and that if something's put on the table, that we get that momentum, that the day it comes for ratification, that every member in the country wants this to happen, to make things happen, and to change the life for the club player for the future.
Yeah, well, so you'll be looking at membership?
Not necessarily as such yet. I'm not. It's not up to me at this moment in time to voice or advise what I think personally. I said that any interviews that I was doing this week, I was just going to have the one statement, more or less along the lines, keep repeating myself. You can call it political if you like, but we are not going to say what we're doing until that actual, I suppose, conference, you know, media press day we'll have in 2 weeks' time, and we will relay all what we're doing down the line.
Yeah, what one simple fix that is being ignored, and I mentioned it at the top of the show, was there's a 13-day rule there, and it's in GAA law. It's a rule in the GAA rule book, and it's not being enforced. So club players at the drop of a hat don't have a blueprint of when their fixtures are being set out at the start of the year. A county manager can just scupper it whenever he feels like. I think even taking that power away and giving that back to club and county boards, you're not just going to be fighting against Congress, you're going to be fighting against county boards, and you're going to be fighting against inter-county managers as well.
Well, let's call a spade, because this could be thrown up at me. If I'm involved in a team, right, I'm going to put around me and I'm going to drive the team forward to maximise their potential. If I feel it's in their interest as a body that we're really tight and we want to get things done, you're going to use every opportunity to get that team together as often as possible, right? Let us be straight about that. Where I'm coming from now is that we need to take the power to the association at the top to bring out certain, whether it's competitions, whatever, whether it's backdoor, whether it's school leagues, Sigerson leagues, that there's only championships. We don't know where it is at this moment in time. But what I can say is the condense of the fixture list that you can play more games and less training. Do you know, I was just looking at a photograph there. In 1992, we played a senior league final. I was player manager with Clontibret. And that was played in the first week in December. What has changed from that? Not an awful lot. The only difference is the club player still waiting to the November-December situation. But not alone that, you now have a situation where club players are now doing training, whether it's gym, strength and conditioning, recovery sessions, maybe 5-6 times a week. A player can have a wedding booked, he can have a holiday booked, he can have and with a drop of the hat, things can be changed. But yet, you go to some other sports, and I'm quite lucky in the job that I'm in. I have touched on numerous sports all over the country and internationally. And the sports there that, listen, hail, rain or snow or funerals or weddings, fixtures goes on. 1 week you lose a person, the next piece, the team loses the next week. That's life. And there needs to be a change of self-interest in the GAA or, you know, where you, people, you know, can't be in a situation that something has to give here, and it's the fixture calendar. There's no ifs or buts.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. And Declan, I know you obviously can't comment too much until you have your first meeting, but personally, from your own point of view, would striking be something you might envisage down the line if, you know, not if there's no changes?
Listen, I'm not craving confrontation. Absolutely not. That's not going to get us anywhere. But this is not going away. I'm putting my time into it. The people that's getting involved. When you say we're first meeting, yes, we have been talking. Yes, things are in place. But we're going along the line that we're launching this in 2 weeks' time, and we're further down the road than people might think. There's so much other stuff going on that people have in place as well. And we're giving them the opportunity to come to us and say, listen, we've been working on this last 12 months. what do you think? And we're trying to bring people together rather than create confrontation. If Pádraig Duffy, he was a teacher of mine in St. Catharines. He got me my first job. I know him. He's a gentleman. And knows he's a fantastic administrator. The president went in with the goal of looking after the clubs. But it's like politics. When you get into the system, you see, oh, I can't change it. And there was an interview, and I think you were involved in it, where Pádraig Duffy said the most powerful part of the GAA body is the club. And they can put the power together to make things happen. And unfortunately, that hasn't happened because of lack of communication from the bottom up, more so than the top down.
Okay, well, listen, Declan, best of luck with it, and we'll be looking forward to seeing what the statement entails in a couple of weeks' time.
Thanks very much, Colin.
All right, next up, we'll have a look at the club fixtures at the weekend.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're at home by where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around, but you're looking at me, you're
well,
looking
out
at me
of a crowded area, isn't
it? You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Yeah, lads, final part, we'll have a look ahead to more club games, loads more club games. I didn't count them, Mikey. Did you count them? You're usually the count them.
Not as many as last week.
Not as many as last week, but there's a lot, and there's a lot to get through. First one that jumps out at me is the Cavan Senior Football Championship Final Replay. Castleharran and Ramor United. I hope I pronounced both of those.
Come on, United.
This is a replay. Mikey, you've got a graph for the Virginia team, Ramor United. Ramor won 3 county titles in their history, last time in 1992. They wear orange and black. Something about orange and black. I don't think I've ever seen club colours of orange and black. Have either of you? Something very original about it.
One club in Derry, they're a junior club, so I don't associate it with being a particularly great strong colour. Do
I don't think so. No, it's not your traditional colours. That's why, and you know, that's why they haven't won since 92. Castleharran have never won it. So there's a few clubs that haven't ever won a county title playing this weekend, and they lost last year's final by a point. So that's going to be a big one. Big one in Clare is another replay: Cratlow versus Kilmurry Ilbrickan. You know, we've got the Podge Collins, as they pulled out a draw in the last kick of the game the last time, so that's going to be a big game as well. Galway Senior Football Championship Final, Cora Finn versus Salt Hill Knocknacarra, two former All-Ireland champions, one 2 years ago, one, I don't know, something like 10 years ago. Then we're to the Roscommon Final, lads. We have Pádraig Pearses versus St. Bridget's. Now, Pádraig Pearses have never ever won the Roscommon Senior Football Championship. They've lost 6 finals. Cake Curran is their manager. They're playing St. Bridget's, who won 5 in a row but lost their title last year, going for 6 in a row. St. Bridget's is Cake's ex-team. There could be some fireworks at this one. Cake knows Bridget's inside out. Bridget's obviously trying to win their title back. A brilliant team, All-Ireland club champions. And I didn't think Cake was going to make it as a manager, but he's got Pádraig Pearses.
Well, you didn't think he was going to make it as a pundit either.
Well, he didn't make it as a pundit. He talked about triangles and bloody rectangles and stuff.
And confused with a jersey number.
Horizontal passes, wasn't that what he called?
You have to give him credit for getting off the pundit's couch and getting out there on the training field.
Exactly.
Proving himself.
That's what everybody wants pundits to do, isn't it? You get more credibility as a pundit if you go back, get your hands dirty, realise, and I genuinely believe this, that it's one fault that I know I have as a pundit, that I don't know things from a manager's perspective. That's why I criticise them so much, because maybe I've never walked in their shoes. Cake is gone back, getting his hands dirty, and he's on the face of it, I don't know Roscommon club football too well, but he seems to be doing very well for himself.
Here's a question: could you manage a team, or your current team, against your club, your old club, your club?
I could, yeah.
Yeah. No ball, you, Mikey.
Well, in that county, it's not an ideal situation. If you're being honest,
you know a Ballandery guy who took. Remember, there was a story went around 2 years ago. He was taking Ardbeau and Tyrone, and both teams qualified for the Ulster Championship, and Ardbeau drew Ballandery, and he stepped away for 2 weeks, didn't take training, didn't take them for the match. I think he went to the match, but he watched it from the stands. He wasn't their manager for 2 weeks. Ardbo won, Ballinderry lost, so he came back in and took Ardbo again. But apparently, I remember that was going the agreement on the whole time. And
Ballinderry won, they won, didn't they?
No, Ballinderry lost. He was taking Ardbo, and Ardbo won.
That was it, yeah. And then he was back for the Ulster club.
Yeah. And I can see it. Like, I think it'd be strange. It's your team, you'd still want them to win, and you're so invested in it. But
no, I think if you're hiring a manager, you're hiring him for a bloody county final. You can't come up with this nonsense. Yeah, I'll manage you, but if you come up against my old club, I don't want
in the Ulster championship, they're not the county.
That's OTT now. Well, then, if that's your attitude, then just wait until the manager's job in your own club comes up. You can't do that to another club, you know. In my opinion, it's a county final. He's not there. Your leader's not there for a county final.
It was Ulster quarter final. But what would have happened if they had met in Ulster final?
Sorry, in Ulster quarter final.
Like, yeah. I can see it. I don't know if I would want to do it against my club. It would be weird.
Well, it would. Well, then wait and manage your own club.
But then don't do it, Cannon.
Yeah, but like, I can see where he's coming from. He wants to get experience. He's taking the team into their own. And then it's just fate that has it that they both meet each other in Ulster then. Like, if I took a team in Donegal, geez, it'd be heartbreaking then to try and put out your old club.
Listen, if you got a team in Donegal, won a county title, I'd say you wouldn't really care less. Let's be honest. You'd be hot property. Leash Senior Hurling Championship Final replay, Boris Kilcotton versus Rathdowney Earl. I was at that match. Unbelievable first game. I tweeted out the halftime score was something like 117 to 213. Incredible. Like, that's a full-time score. So, you know what they say, replays now, it'll be a cagey affair. Oh, yeah, we won't see the same kind of standard of hurling. Limerick Senior Hurling Championship Final, Bally Brown versus Patrick Swell. Na Piershig, defending Ireland champions, are out. Bally Brown haven't won since 91, Patrick Swell since 2003. Going to be an emotional win down there, whoever wins it.
Oh, big time. Bally Brown, they're still mad for Ireland down there.
Burr are in the Offaly final, hurling final. They're playing St. Rhinas. Rhinas, they're on the way to being the new Owlart de Balla. They have only in Leinster terms. They've lost three of the last four finals Rhinas have. So
that's
They'll be looking to try and turn that around.
Did you see that they've got, when the last time Burr played Rhinas in the final, these are two of the like, great traditional rivals. They had Brian Mullins in the goal, Barry Whelan in midfield, and Rory Hanafy left wing forward. On Sunday they'll have Brian Mullins in the goal, Barry Whelan number 9, and Roy Hanafy number 12.
Barry Whelan is still playing,
yeah,
in midfield.
Yeah.
Burr haven't won since 08. They have the record of All Ireland clubs, don't they, along with Portumna or someone like that. Ballyhill maybe it is as well, I'm not too sure. But Burr are the aristocrats and they've kind of fallen off the
a little bit, and St. Rhinas are the bridesmaids. So they really are, like, that's, you're going back to Dignan versus Dahi Regan and all that there. Those two clubs really have, they always had a great rivalry, so that should be a good one.
Yeah, that's another huge one. Waterford Senior Hurling Championship Final doesn't involve Mount Sion, as Ken McGrath just told us when he was in. They were beaten in the semi-final last week, so it's Ballygunner versus Passage. Ballygunner are going for 3 in a row, so that's something to look out for. Ballygunner have the two O'Mahony brothers, obviously Pádraig and
Philip.
Brilliant, because I got a bit of a mind blank there. So, you know, they have a very good, strong club team. That's all the finals. We've also got semi-finals in Mayo and Dublin. Conan, you're looking forward to the Mayo semi-finals.
I'm looking forward to Friday night football. Is it not the Tyrone final on Friday as
it
well?
It is.
Kelly Clutter and Cole Aiden.
Really weird one for club players to play on a Friday night.
What an atmosphere it will be, though.
But I asked, actually, Mikey to check that. I thought, okay, they're playing Friday night because under lights, because there's Ulster Club at the weekend. You know, the replay has messed it all up. There's no Ulster Club for them at the weekend. They seem to have chosen to go Friday
replay,
night lights.
You have the 6-day turnaround.
Let's not hope they're not copying Premier League kind of.
I think the one county you can bank on for never copying the Premier League would be Tyrone.
How are League of Ireland fans going to get people out now if there's going to be Friday night football in Tyrone?
There you go. Yeah.
But yes, I'm looking forward to Sunday. There's two Mayo senior semi-finals, two massive games as well. Breithe are playing Knockmore, I think, at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
In McHale Park, and Castle Bar are playing Ballintubber.
That's a bigger one.
Cracker.
That's a bigger one.
3:30.
Castle Bar obviously bottled last year's All Ireland final after beating Cross in the semi. You know, that was a disaster. Ballintubber have the O'Connors and Alan Dillon.
Yeah.
So you imagine on paper, Ballintubber, that's a team I really like. Ballintubber actually couldn't beat St. Bridget's in the Connacht final, so they're
right.
At that level where they're almost all Ireland standard. Mayo club football is very, very strong, and it kind of reflects their county team. Like, they've 3 or 4 clubs that are bloody good.
I used to work down there, and the standard of senior and even intermediate football in Mayo, it's top class, and it is as competitive as hell. It seems like every club has a hatred of every other club. It's like every match is a derby for some reason, or some connection between it. For a county that size, they managed to have an awful lot of niggle in their games. It's a really good championship, actually.
Yeah,
and Killeen O'Connor 4-4 in the quarterfinal there last weekend.
4-4, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
shit championship. never eat that most.
It needs to be pointed out that 4-4 was part of 6-18 or something.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's always a, like, you know, like that's a caveat. Child, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I don't think there's any way that he scored 4-4 out of 4-8 in a low, you know, relatively low scoring game. But anyway, that's not to take away from Killeen O'Connor, who's done that. He got 3-3 against Donegal in an All-Ireland quarterfinal. So he can stick them away if he gets the space. Dublin quarterfinals, lads. Ooh. All the big teams have been kept away from each other. So we're looking at a stage where we're going to have Vincent's, we're going to have Ballymunkickham's, we're going to have Kilmacook Crokes, and then potentially Castleknock in semi-finals.
Potentially, if you got that accumulator going for the next couple of days, you seem pretty sure.
The
those
first
results.
Three are bankers. I picked Castleknock because I can't remember who they were playing. I don't have it written down in front of me. But yeah, they're like the Dublin Club Championship is heating up, and I'd say if you wanted to just actually pick the draw to get to make sure that you had good semi-finals, they're almost like, I'm not saying that's what they did,
what are you saying?
But like, okay, I can't find another reason to criticise the Dublin County Board. It was all above board, there's no doubt.
Are you looking at me? Do you want me to start talking about Dear McConnelly? Will we all talk about Dear McConnelly?
You're banned from talking about Dear McConnelly. You're banned from writing about Dear McConnelly. We need
he's playing this week.
Dermot, if you looked out your window and saw a red haired guy down around your down rooting around your bins, it was not Conor Doherty, and he was not looking for a souvenir that you might have thrown out.
I'm not saying anything.
Okay, I've said too much here. Alright, listen, that's all we have time for today. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you next Wednesday. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.